Welcome to the Florida Specifier Podcast. This is Brett Cyphers, and I'm joined today by my co-host and fellow members of the Specifier Editorial Board. First, there's our editor-in-chief, Patrick Gillespie, who is a government affairs advisor with Adams & Reese. Then there's Jeff Littlejohn. He's with the National Stormwater Trust, On-Site Performance, and he's also a senior advisor at the Adams & Reese law firm. Next, there's Ryan Matthews. Ryan is a government affairs expert with Gray Robinson Law Firm. And I do government and external affairs for CN Shoreline, and I host another Specifier Media podcast called Water for Fighting. Gentlemen, it's great to be with you here in the Specifier Media studio. Yes, I'm still calling it that, Patrick.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. You put some more decorations on the walls.
No, I have not, but we're not on camera yet, and so someday,
who cares?
When we're fancy.
I'm just happy to be here.
We're happy to
be here,
too.
I missed you guys last time.
Yeah, and we missed you.
It's good to be around an expert.
So I use the same title. I have it here on the outline. It's Session is Dead, Long Live Session, or The Budget is Dead, Long Live the Budget. We're in the middle of a budget session right now. I think it's a little bit of a fool's task to try to figure out what's gonna happen. But Ryan, since you're our prodigal son, give us an idea what's going on over there.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. We are in the midst of a special session on the budget for the second session in a row. We did not leave the end of regular session with a budget, which is the one thing the legislature is constitutionally mandated to pass. So we're in the middle of budget conference this week. The way that this is supposed to play out is that by the end of today, any issues that are unresolved would be bumped to the budget chairman of the House and Senate. So therefore, rank and file members can leave Tallahassee and go back to their homes. And the budget chairs will, along with the presiding officers, will continue to work on those unresolved issues. The hope is that the budget will be ready to be voted on sometime after Memorial Day. So that last week of May, hope springs eternal. If we are looking at past performance, I would say that's not a guarantee. You know, this week, the conference committees have gone back and forth and proposed various proposals to the other chamber, and I wouldn't say that things are going well.
There doesn't seem to be, in looking at the crosstabs, and I think to do that on a, you know, on a minute by minute basis is a little frustrating and kind of pointless, I think, for, you know, the general, you know, audience out there wondering what's going on. But I think it is notable that it doesn't seem like they agree on much of anything. And I'm thinking like the environmental side of things. Is there anything that they actually have agreed on from that standpoint?
Not yet, but it looks like it will play out in that we will have a couple of big topics that need to, you know, come to some sort of middle ground. Conservation easement, Florida Forever funding being one of them, Everglades funding in total being another. I think the latest Senate offer in the ag and natural resources space had the water quality improvement grant being funded around $350 million, which is, you know, more than the 200 or so or zero that it has gotten in the past. But the question, because of the last couple of sessions, is what does that mean for individual member water projects? Because we've kind of gone back and forth with either funding water projects and not funding the water quality improvement grant program, or funding the program and getting 90% of water projects vetoed. So I think that's, you know, those are kind of the big environmental topics. And then, you know, within conservation purchases, we also have how much money is going to go to DACS for the Rural and Family Lands Program, and whether or not acquisitions by the state are going to be less than fee or full fee acquisitions for conservation purchases. So a couple big ticket items, but I think the Everglades is also one that looms large. The governor, I think, has already publicly stated that he would not be afraid to call the legislature back and do another special session if Everglades weren't funded to his reasonably decided position.
I like how you put that. Others might not put it that way.
Others might.
others might. Is there any talk or rumors about any other part of the budget that the governor has made a stand? Like, what? It's his last year as governor. He gets one more shot at his line item veto. Is there any sense of beyond the Everglades funding that he has said, I'm aiming at this? You know, typically, like early on with governors, and it's the last 3-4 governors, they try to outdo each other in terms of the number of vetoes. But where does he sit, do you think, at this point, closing out as the governor?
It's interesting. There are some not so subtle jabs being thrown in the budgeting process. I think the governor's travel budget got slashed quite significantly in one of the previous offers. The Job Opportunity Growth Fund, which is funded through the Department of Commerce, which started under Governor Scott, which is sort of a supplemental fund for a governor to go and give local governments who are incentivizing businesses to come to their community, was at zero in one of the offers. And I mean, it's important to state that like nothing is finalized until the budget is completed. There's a 72-hour window where it's laid on the desk and then it's voted on. So the conference process allows for the chambers to put offers back and forth. Sometimes those offers are really for nothing more than a message, and then the supplemental offer will come and that message is taken back or whatnot. But right now, you know, the interesting thing for those of us paying very close attention to is how much pain is the legislature willing to inflict on the governor who still holds the veto pen once the budget reaches his desk.
Well, I guess time will tell. Folks, you'll hear this. This is being recorded on the 14th, and so you'll hear it about a week after this. But
Next episode might be talking about the budget story.
Well, hopefully not. I mean, last year, when was the budget passed and then signed? I think it was
somewhere around June,
right?
28th.
That's right. Yeah.
For the July 1st start of the state's fiscal
That's
year.
That's right. Yeah. A little close to the wire there. So hope springs eternal that people and not just the legislators, but other people can get on with their lives in the interim.
And then come back shortly after.
Well, you should
for property tax and whatever else, right? So
I'm washing my hair that day, but that'll be great as well. Should we move on to the paper?
We shall.
I think it's a great idea. Isn't that why we're here?
I don't know why we're here, Jeff. So so we obviously got a little bit of content in from the legislative session proper, talked a little bit about some of the bills that had gone through, some that were sort of pending that were in the environment and energy space. We highlighted a little bit about, you know, greenhouse gas emissions. We got into aquatic preserve regulations and restrictions. So there are a handful of bills that actually came through and passed. At the time of this recording, I think there have been a bill or two that was signed by the governor that we kind of listed as pending based on the print deadline. And then there's obviously more. I don't know what the count is right now, Ryan, but I think it's probably 100-something bills that have not even made their way over. So still a lot pending and up in the air in terms of policy. And then obviously with the budget being finalized, a little bit of policy sometimes makes its way into language. So we'll see where all that lands. And then throughout the paper, not really a huge theme in this one, really just updates on a lot of the projects that are out there in the state and anything on the regional side that might be affecting Florida eventually. I know it's just sort of a little feature that we have had in the paper for a long time, but the around the Gulf is always interesting to me, just to understand how the other states in our region are reacting to environmental regulation. Obviously, as you get further west, you have a lot of oil and gas influence, but it's interesting to see how Texas in particular is really diving into data centers, which is a stark contrast to how Florida's diving into data centers, and just some of the investments that are being made in some of those states and the types of businesses that they're attracting, which is, you know, at least in terms of manufacturing, has always been a struggle for Florida. And so it's interesting to see what those other states are doing. So definitely there's a little plug for Around the Gulf. Check it out. There's always some interesting tidbits in there that you might not normally pick up.
Yeah, it was one of my side notes for favorite articles. So now I can just say my favorite article is one and not act like Jeff and pick multiples. But that had to do with, like, Louisiana. Like, you're right. It's like very focused when it comes to, you know, regulatory, you know, activities around, you know, oil and natural gas. And I thought it was fascinating that it was an article about a contract for $300 million for a handful of hybrid tugboats that are going to be used at some new $17 billion natural gas facility. And, you know, I thought to myself, like, wow, that's a fascinating process that they go through there. But also, is it too late to get into the tugboat business? I had no idea.
We're just on the cutting edge, Brett.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, thank you for Around the Gulf for nothing more than the shock value of that particular article.
I think in Little John's next intro, you're going to see Green Tug Towing partner as part of his...
Should we move on to favorite articles? I'll let Jeff guide the tugboat, or guide the ship follow, with the tugboat.
Follow the tugboat. I don't know. I don't know how to follow that. I like the paper. I like the mix of articles. Patrick, good job as always. I don't know why you would let me write an opinion piece in this article.
I was desperate.
I guess.
Yeah. Moment of need. Moment of weakness.
You had a hole on page 6 or 8 or whatever, and. Let me opine on biosolids. There was a lot of biosolids legislation this year, and a lot of people were asking me about what it meant. So I threw some words together, and Patrick, for whatever reason, published it. But my favorite article, we stay on the 404 assumption issue and really have done so since the beginning. So we had another, I mean, it's 6 weeks old now, but at the time of the printing, the latest status on the vacature of our 404 program, we had another action. The appeals court upheld the lower court decision. It was a split decision, and so we covered a little bit of the pro and con, or the majority and minority opinion. There was some really interesting discussion about the appropriateness of a programmatic Endangered Species Act consultation, and it, for really wonky policy nerds in this part of the law and regulation. It's troubling, and I think we've heard some chatter through DEP that EPA is concerned about this ruling. Let me just summarize what it is first, and then I'll say why it's concerning. So the majority said that it is improper to programmatically evaluate the potential Endangered Species Act issues ahead of all of those future decisions, that all should have been considered and contemplated in the decision to grant the program to DEP. But the minority said, well, that's impossible. You can't possibly predict, you know, all of the potential impacts of all of those future projects for the rest of time, that the programmatic approach is reasonable and appropriate, because then you have case-specific information, project-specific information, and the program was designed so that both the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission can consult on those project-specific impacts and that's the only practical way of doing it. So that minority position is really important, because the reason why EPA is concerned is there is another whole program called 316B that also relies on that programmatic consultation. And this appeals court majority ruling that's improper now exposes that other program to some litigation, potentially new litigation risk. So there's still a question about whether future action, legal action, will take place to keep that appeal alive. We're keeping tabs on it, but we haven't heard anything new as of this recording.
That's a fascinating topic and obviously important to a lot of folks in Florida. But it does strike me that there are other states that have assumed the program, and Florida did for a bit and now is not able to. And it's just interesting to see how that's all going to play out.
Hmm. What do we not have that Michigan and New Jersey have? I mean, right. Come on.
Exactly.
That's a whole other podcast.
Patrick, did you have a favorite one, or did you already mention it?
I have not. My favorite was the Q&A with Bruce Ritchie. So longtime environmental reporter. We sparred back in the day. He was a reporter and I was the press secretary at DEP. We had plenty of arguments. My opinion of Bruce is he was not always agreeing, but it was always at least reasonable to talk to and kind in his approach, which is not necessarily the same with a lot of reporters. It was cool to just get his perspective on what he's seen over 40 years of reporting on environmental issues. And, you know, obviously he's going to still probably stay involved in some issues in a different way, but I think he's trying to figure it out. But cool little Q&A in there, and just those are always fun little formats to kind of get to know people. So hope people enjoy that.
I think the answer is probably Substack, Bruce, or I'm wondering if Patrick could also give you a job as a beat reporter for the Specifier.
Never know. Wow. Specifier Media Group.
That's right.
Might be hiring. Who knows?
Contract writer. Let's do it.
What do you think, Ryan?
About what?
About your favorite article.
Oh, favorite article. I think that I was most drawn to the Tampa Bay sort of water quantity article written by WSP, not because I represent both the city of Tampa and WSP, but
a third reason.
Yeah, a third reason in that it's interesting to see. I think Tampa in particular has been sort of at the forefront of the more statewide conversation that we will have on water quantity and that mm-hmm. we've been having since, you know, 2010 about potentially eventually utilizing potable reuse. And we've seen previous machinations between the city of Tampa's Tampa Augmentation Project, between the SHARP project that's mentioned in the article, the South Hillsborough Aquifer Recharge Project, you know, about what to do with an increasing population with a strained resource and how we're actually going to create or continue to have water for the region. And I think that a lot of it has been public education, been an obstacle in terms of ultimately getting to potable reuse, but I think we've had solutions on the table. But then you also sort of bring in Tampa Bay Water, the entity, mm-hmm. Which creates just sort of another variable in the, you know, in the commodity of water in the region. And so, you know, all of those things make the article very interesting. And it's something that Bruce should probably write a book about, going back to the Tampa Bay Water Wars.
Yeah.
And just sort of where do we go in the next decade, 2-3 decade plus.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, the beginning ground zero of, you know, of where these things all started and continue to be that way in terms of, you know, what to do next. And I know they've been pushing the idea of trying to figure out how to make potable reuse work. And that goes back to probably at least a decade, maybe more.
Absolutely.
You know, at this point, and yeah, you know, it's these are challenges. People continue to want to move to Florida. We continue to not want to stop them. And that means, you know, resources become scarcer. And so it's some choice making time. And I look forward to seeing how Tampa approaches that. Mine is across the other side of the state, the St. John's River Water Management District. And Danielle Fitzpatrick, who always comes through, you know, with a specifier, with great information. This article is about some real-time data collection and then maybe even forecasting coming in the next year or two, as it relates to how to prepare for and then react to storms. And it seems like in Florida, it's a very good learning state, and Florida always learns from the lessons from the last hurricane, constantly trying to improve. And I think this is a great representation of things that one can do, things that government should be involved in doing, which is helping, you know, their member, I'll call it member local governments, and their regional partners in terms of how to get through, you know, these major storms that seem to be a magnet for them of late and other parts of the state. And so hat tip to Chris Mundy, hat tip to, you know, my friend Tom Frick for the work they're doing there and that entire team.
Well, it's such a big deal. You know, you think about hurricane response and you think about life safety, right? You think about just kind of homes being destroyed, businesses being destroyed, but it's so difficult with, you know, water systems that cross barriers and trying to be able to coordinate that to reduce runoff, to reduce, you know, just this influx of water that comes in. And what do you do with it? How do you move it? And how do you, you know, again, that becomes a life safety issue as well as an environmental issue. And so, yeah, incredible work by them. And always grateful for what they send our way because they give us great content. And yeah, hope all the water management districts and local governments are taking note.
Extremely timely, because from everything I read, we've got a Chris Farley El Nino coming this season. So
that's terrifying.
We'll see what happens with the Atlantic. I know I have been derelict in you know, showing up to certain podcast recordings, but yes. Brett, you've been, you know, busy as usual. You want to talk a little bit about some upcoming podcasts you've got coming?
Yeah, I think once you get past the current fun and excitement across the way here, I'm looking forward to putting you to work on some more specifier podcasts that you and I like to do with elected officials, other folks that like to talk about what's going on with their work and their lives. But in the meantime, I've got recordings that I've done already. Margaret Spontek, I think I mentioned her last time. that we talked on this podcast. It is recorded. It's ready to go. I'm kind of waiting for three or four to be kind of in the can before I start the new season of Water for Fighting, so I don't get into what y'all seen this past season, which is like, you know, one a month or every other month or what have you. And so once that starts, it'll be good. I've also already recorded former DP Secretary Herschel Vineyard. That was a great conversation. I think everybody's going to enjoy that. Marianne Winkler from the St. John's River Water Management is going to be coming in. I've already have one scheduled with Justin Friedman from Res, a great guy, and he's their Florida GM. Cindy Littlejohn, who's known to certainly to us, she's an author and also somehow of a relation to Jeff. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about her latest book, Palmetto Pioneers, and that's going to be really exciting for me as well. I love talking to authors. And then we'll get Chuck Drake, a great dude, old, you know, guy I've known since, you know, my first job in the governor's office over, gosh, 22, 23 years ago. So looking forward to that conversation as well.
Go ahead and set aside two or so days for that one.
That's right. That's right. So now we've got, should we talk about the calendar? And Patrick, I want you to cover this if you can. And then we're going to kind of, I think, kick it to the two guys in the middle here to discuss, because we've got a particular event coming up in the not distant future. And I want them to talk about what that's going to look like. And also, if you don't mind, talking about how people can participate leading into that particular event later this summer as it relates to the specifier.
I think the event you're talking about is the Environmental Permitting Summer School. I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so conferences and events, you know, we always have a section here for what's going on. The PFAS Forum is actually going on as we speak, so by the time you hear this, it'll be over. You missed it. There are some other things coming up. Hazardous Waste Conference in Crystal River, Florida Association of Water Quality Control, their annual conference is in Naples in June. There's a Recycled Florida Today annual conference in June in Daytona. Quite a few things coming up. And yeah, before we get into the meat of the last event in our conferences and events section, we do have our next edition coming out in early July. Obviously, this is a big one, not only in terms of size, it's typically a little bit larger in terms of the content, but the exposure it's given to everybody who comes to Marco Island. It's displayed around the conference. I'll obviously be at the conference as well. So just a plug, but a little bit of a different plug. If you want to talk about projects you have going on, you want to talk about issues that are going on, please definitely reach out. Patrick@FloridaSpecifier.com. You can reach any of us, obviously, but you know, call for content. We want to make sure this is a robust article with a lot of interesting analysis and interesting information about what's going on in Florida.
Yeah, and we'll do some, and again, I'm sticking on the specifier side of things, not the actual event itself. We're going to do some recording. Ryan and I will do some recording while we're down there, and that'll be with kind of the old schoolers for summer school. And if you want to, or if you think you want to record a podcast with me for Water for Fighting or the specifier, hit me up as well. Glad to make some time for you when we're down there, but let's talk about it beforehand.
Jeff, why don't you tell them a little bit about the conference?
Okay.
I mean, it's the 40th year, right?
It's kind of a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's one of our big ones. So, yeah, there'll be a lot of throwback content, maybe a few things that you haven't seen before. I don't want to spoil anything. But anyway, the conference this year is July 21st through 24th in Marco Island. The JW is already sold out, and we've got a pretty good waiting list. So, Patrick, I don't know if you already have your room or not, but, you know, you're assuming you're going.
If Jamie's listening, please confirm.
If he was a senior advisor, he'd already have a room.
That's shucks. Right. Still a hard room to get, but they're doing a great job, and we're getting through a lot of folks on our wait list. It's going to be a big crowd. I think we're going to be over 1,400 again. We're on pace with the kind of size we had last year. Again, just a lot of throwback content. We're changing up a handful of classes, but it's going to be a good show. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, it always is. I always not just get a lot of professional value out of it, but it's also, I see it as there are folks that, you know, that we've known, that we work with, that we see very seldom, but that we like and respect a lot. And so it's also kind of a class reunion of sorts every summer. So it's nice. It's a nice networking event. It's a nice family event. You know, I know y'all take your families down. I do as well. I don't get to see them during the conference, but I hear that they enjoy themselves very much. And then we start the week and end the week together, which is also nice as well.
When you're presented the bill for the fun that they had for the week.
That's right. That's right. And please, if they're listening, which they are not, eat more than a muffin if you're going to get the breakfast buffet.
Do we have any more special guests coming this year, guys?
We're hopeful to announce some special guests in the near term. Not ready to do that just yet, but I know that Jeff and I were looking at the class schedule this week, and that will also be dropped here very, very soon. So, yeah, it's just, again, hard to believe that it's the 40th rendition of the event, but very much looking forward to getting back down there.
Anything like the, I hate to, you know, ask for something and you say that, no, you can't have that, that's life, but I did enjoy immensely the lunch program last year that included the fireside chat of sorts with you, Ryan, and then the other former DEP secretaries. Delightful. Anything like that this year?
The two lunch programs are not yet finalized.
Fair enough.
So we're looking to see how we can, you know, make that as entertaining as possible, as opposed to just having sort of a canned speech at a lectern. So we'll see what we come up with. I know I was very excited when we were first talking to the hotel about what could be done for the 40th rendition. I mean, there was some talk of a pirate invasion at one point.
Environmental jeopardy.
This is awesome.
So we'll see what happens. You gotta attend.
I'll take PFAS right. For 1,000, please.
To find out.
I'll be there. Can't wait to see it.
It'll be a spectacle.
Tacos, hopefully.
Oh, that would be great.
Are we going back?
Bring back the tacos.
We need tacos. We definitely need tacos.
Talk to Jamie.
Always. Yeah.
Please send your food advice to Jeff Littlejohn, not Jamie Sheehan, at least not if you want a room.
On the taco note, I think we'll go ahead and get out of here. Thanks for listening to the Florida Specifier Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you don't like what you hear, it's probably my fault, so do be sure to let me know, but don't hold it against the rest of the guys. I recommend subscribing to the Florida Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com and read your environmental news and commentary the new, old-fashioned way. But do be sure to subscribe. It's easy, inexpensive, and offers a ton of ways to read, watch, listen, and learn at your fingertips. Your support, as always, is greatly appreciated.
Production of this podcast is by Carl Sorn and David Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios, and we want to thank Bagels and Biscuits for letting us use their music for the podcast. Join us next time as we delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Ryan Matthews, Patrick Gillespie, and Brett Cyphers, I'm Jeff Littlejohn, and we'll see you next time.